Pickaxe.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Triforce. Sips, how you doing?
Oh, just great. Yeah, thanks for asking. How are you doing?
Good. PFLAX, how are you doing?
Hello. I'm coming at you live from the Isle of Sheppey.
Where is that?
It is North Kent.
Yeah. Oh,
there's a little...
So it's one of those urban islands that's not actually, like, isolated at all. It's basically just a normal town.
It's odd because you have to cross a very large Scandinavian-looking bridge to get here. I don't know if there are other bridges. And then it is, I mean, if you look on a map, it is like a chunk of land that's completely separated by water, I believe. But it's,
yeah, it is, yeah.
It's oddly industrial on the bit that you come in from because of all the docks and stuff around here. So you come over this bridge and it's just, there's a vast Morrison's warehouse, what do they call it, distribution center. It's enormous. And then there's like a huge factory of some kind. And there's like a massive thing with all lights and it looks like a power thing. And there's power lines everywhere. And then we drove for half an hour. We went past a prison, huge prison.
Nice.
And then we're in the
like
countryside.
Alcatraz.
Yeah. Oh. And then, and now we're in the middle of the countryside and I can see Whitstable with my binoculars. And we're literally in the middle of a huge field. There's a few houses and then there's just fields in all directions for miles around. So it's very, very quiet, very peaceful.
Right.
Sheep Island is what it comes from, the Old English. Sheepy Island.
Sheepy Island.
A plentiful source of fossils.
Ooh.
So it's basically, I don't know whether it is an island, but it's got like a river sort of really blocking it, so it's this large river, isn't it, or something. It doesn't feel like a true kind of, you know what I mean? Since it's so close to the coast and so close to everything else, you could probably swim across.
Yes, you could swim across. But I mean, I suppose river. In some technical sense, it is, they call it an isle, but it's definitely not, it's not off the coast. But I'm sure the people that live here call themselves islanders.
But also it's like the psychology, right, of going away somewhere like that. It feels like you've isolated yourself or you've like, you know, like Jersey, you know. It always feels to me like, even though it's very British, very, I'm still connected to everything, I'm just away from the world. So can you trick yourself? Where is the family, by the way? I was expecting them to, are they silently listening in the background?
No. It's me and Mrs. F and the girls, and then we've also brought my mum.
Right.
Because, you know, she's on her own.
That's a good shout, isn't it? Like, you bring along a mother-in-law or somebody, and then it just, like, you can say, like, oh, hey, I just need to go to the store, and then you can just, like, go to the pub all afternoon.
You'd think so. But because of COVID, it's been really hard to find a place to book. So we were only able to get one place for 2 days. We got this place for 2 days. So... We drove down on Monday to the south coast in an area called, it was yesterday and I've already forgotten it.
It was that good.
It was near Rye. It was quite near Rye. It was Rye Harbour. Rye is another very historic town.
So what, you booked two different places?
And we had
stayed
to.
In one
yeah.
for a couple of days and another for, that's very strange.
Yeah,
why is it so like that?
Because it's just hard to get a booking. It's hard to find places because of COVID. A lot of it.
Yeah,
places
some places
down.
Just aren't open, and then some places are just booked up because people need to.
Because
get
there's
away.
Less places, people are booking up what they can get.
Like with lockdown and stuff, you gotta think as well. Like we live in a house. So it's not too bad. There's like a downstairs and an upstairs. So during lockdown, like I've got the garage, like everybody can disperse around the house and have space to themselves and it's fine, right? Like it's not too bad. But like a lot of people will live in flats, smaller accommodation. You know, they might have like a couple and like one child, sometimes a couple and multiple children living like in a smaller a flat or something like that. Holy crap. Can you imagine being locked down for as long as everybody was locked down for?
There's just nowhere to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Just literally, you know, like crammed in like sardines. Because the thing is, if you have a living accommodation like that, you're more likely to just go out a lot, right? You probably eat out a lot more. You're probably out all the time on the weekends, like with the kids and stuff. And that makes sense. But with lockdown, not being able to do that, you can imagine that a lot of people are just like desperate to go and stay in some accommodation that's bigger and just, yeah, you know, air out.
I know people as well who it's not even their family that they're stuck in that situation with. It's like with a flatmate or something like that. So it's not even someone that you could really like. I feel like you can forgive family a lot.
Yeah.
But other people, they're the limit for acceptance and forgiveness is far, far lower. You know, yeah. you're going to lose your mind with them a lot quicker.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and I mean, it feels to me almost like there was no, you know, winter is a kind of time when everyone's sort of stuck inside anyway because it's raining and it's cold and it's miserable. And sure, you can go out occasionally.
Fuck, this week has been like just a testament to that. Fuck, it's like a hurricane over here every goddamn day. Like,
and so we just got onto the end of that sort of winter, you know, February, March period when we were all sort of put into the lockdown the first time. So it feels like everyone was kind of ready and they were just starting to go out again and kind of do stuff, and then at least that's what it's like here a little bit. I guess it does get pretty miserable for the winter months, you know.
Yeah.
It's something we always complain about a lot, but we sort of it's long enough between summer and winter for us to forget just how bad it was and how dark it is, you know, and like getting up at sort of 8 in the morning and it's dark, and then going to, you know, getting home at like 5 and it's dark, and it's like, geez, you know. But we have it great compared to Scandinavia or Canada, I'm sure. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I was just talking to my aunt yesterday, and it's like 3 degrees there. She lives alone, and she lives in Montreal, and it's they're kind of locked down again. Not as bad as like a while back, but you know, like the cases are rising, and they're telling people to not go out as much, and blah blah blah. And so with the weather being like it is, her normal thing was when she wanted to, you know, like meet up with people, she'd meet up with her friends and just go for like a walk, like a distanced walk or whatever. But she can't really do that now because it's so cold outside.
Yeah.
So there's just nothing really for her to do. So I think she just Skypes like anybody who will Skype with her. It's pretty funny.
Well, I like that.
Yesterday we went to, because we left the first, because you know the way they have a checkout and a check-in time in all these places. The checkout time in our first house was 10 a.m. And the check-in time at the next place was 4 p.m. So we had 6 hours to waste. Now there's 5 of us in our car with the dog in the boot and a week's worth of luggage for all and food that we brought with us because it's quite remote. You know, there's things you need. And so the car was absolutely jammed full. And we had to waste 6 hours. So we went we were so desperate. We went to Dungeness because my mum had never been there. And I'd been there before with Mrs. F, but the kids hadn't seen it in a long time. And Dungeness is a very strange place because even though it is definitely connected to land, it feels like you're in another, so it feels like another dimension, like you've stepped through some portal. So you drive down a series of very long, winding sort of roads and then some very straight roads. And it's right on the coast. And it's a very, very deep, rocky beach with sort of thick grass, swampy heath around it. And then there's just all these houses. And they're all different. And they all look like some weird artist's residence or an abandoned ghost house. Like, that's pretty much what all the houses look like on the Dungeness estate. And it's very strange. They're all quite distant from each other. Some of them are so small that you think it must be like a single person could stay in there for a few nights before they lost their mind, like a cell of some kind. And then there's two massive lighthouses and a cafe and a pub. And then there's this huge Dungeness power station, the nuclear power station, looming over everything. It's so strange. And if that wasn't weird enough, we got there and the rain was coming down so hard that I could barely see. We pull up, the rain breaks for like just long enough for everybody to run inside, and we had to get the dog because she's in the boot. So when I went to get the dog out of the boot, it started hailing horizontally. Like it's like a hail of machine gun fire coming in from the coast. And the hail is just shooting into the car and filling up the boot, and the dog is freaking out, and I'm trying to put the collar on her. And Mrs. F is like, just get the collar out of her. So I slammed the boot door. I was like, you go inside, I'm staying in the car. Like, I completely lost my mind and just sat and sulked in the car for a bit. And while I was in there just thinking this is the worst holiday ever, the sun magically came out and I got out and I got the dog on her collar and I took her into the cafe. But I was completely soaked through. I mean, as if I'd been it through a car wash level of soaked. My shoes were squelching. And that was at 10:30 in the morning. So obviously we couldn't check in till 4. So I was walking around squelching everywhere all day. It's been miserable. I'm not going to lie. It's been a crap holiday so far.
Oh, man.
That sounds like every British childhood holiday I had from the ages of 4 through to, you know, 15. I think, honestly, my parents had been through the same thing and realized that English holidays were just kind of drab and miserable. Like, if you were unlucky, you just got a shitty, miserable, bad weather week, even in summer.
Yeah.
And it was just like being trapped with the family. If you might as well have been at home. And there was just, it was just not, I mean, I remember we went to Norfolk a couple of times and it was pretty miserable. I mean, me and my brother would play Magic the Gathering or something like this, you know, to try and keep ourselves entertained. And,
right.
But after a while, my parents were just like, yeah, we're going to go on holiday less, but we're going to go somewhere abroad.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was like, instead of going away every year, we'd go away every other year to like a Greek island or something. I mean, we do.
For us, it was either camping or driving somewhere so fucking far away that it just took days to drive there.
Right, like, yeah.
Multiple days of, like, you know, 8-9 hour driving. And it was the worst. Oh my God.
I used to hate it. It was hot.
Like, it was the 80s. You know, most cars didn't have like air conditioning or anything. And it was just like, oh, geez, the worst. Fucking
most of those types of shitty holidays that I went on with my dad, because he was back in the day, he was a scout sort of leader when he was in his 20s, you know, back up in Derby. He was a big scout. He was part of the scout sort of group and had a lot of fun up in Derby because it's kind of the Lake District, the Peak District, all around up there, and so it's
what compels you to be a scout leader in your 20s.
Exactly, that was what he was doing during his 20s, and he really enjoyed going out on the Peak District. When he had a lot of friends in it, and he stayed friends with them his whole life, really. Anyway, as a sort of scout master, I think he'd done his time. And when I was in the scouts, he was one of the sort of, rather than being a scout leader, he was kind of just a dad who was keen to get involved, because he remembered everything and had all of his kicks. He kept everything, you know. He kept this old knackered old tent that was clearly like 30 years old when he got it. But it was this sort of heavy canvas tent with these really heavy metal poles. And I feel like a lot of his idea of camping was driving up to a campsite and then pulling the tent out of the back of the car and literally putting it out there, you know, not carrying it any distance. You know, there was no, that was it. That was like part of it, right? And so it was this very kind of, there was no trekking into the wilderness to camp. You know, you were camping in a campsite that had a toilet facility and a shower facility and probably like a little chef next door or something like this, you know. And so it was kind of this, it was nice in a sense, but it was also kind of not quite what we were expecting, because sometimes, you know, the people were like, oh, we have to trek some distance, you know, and trying to bring my dad's tent was not doable. I think even then it was like, even sort of 20, 30 years ago, it was knackered. it was nice. I will say like I did a lot of this stuff. I mean, you guys must have done the Duke of Edinburgh and the cadets and all this stuff where you went out and you went somewhere fucking miles away.
We did. Yeah, we did. I was in Beavers and Cubs. I don't know if you guys have the same system over there, but like, so Cubs was, I probably, you move on from Cubs to Scouts at, when you're like 10 or 11, I guess. So like, yeah, like fairly young. I was like pretty young, but I never went into Scouts because I just like, I didn't even really like Cubs that much.
Someone always picks some arbitrary distance, like in the Brecon Beacons or somewhere completely on the other side of the country. And we go there for almost no reason.
Yeah.
And sure, it's like a beautiful place, but it's a long fucking way.
Yeah.
And you're often just camping in a field anyway. And so there's a field right next to where we were. Do you know what I mean? Like, but you had to go somewhere different. It was that psychology. Right?
Yeah, we had winter retreat and summer retreat. And so winter retreat, you stayed in like a big cabin, because obviously you couldn't camp outside in a tent in the snow and stuff. And everything was like dog sledding, ice fishing, like all like that sort of wintry outdoor stuff. And that was all right. But like you're
penguin baiting.
You're sleeping in this massive sort of, it was like a barracks or like a dormitory or something, right? It had these bunk beds and stuff, and like it was just, man, I don't even know if they do that nowadays.
Time for igloo building today.
It was like six
winter camp.
Six men looking after like 30 kids. I don't know like how that.
That's what it was.
I don't know how that flies today. Like with everything that goes on and stuff like that. I just don't know how anybody sends their kids off on those things unless you really know the six guys.
It almost felt like, that wasn't a thing. It almost felt quite reckless anyway, in a sense, because, you know, you're out there with all these kids who are kind of not the, you know, but I guess you're just kind of scared straight often in these places because you know that, like, you're in the middle of a fucking wilderness area. If you wandered off, you know, you'd probably get eaten by you'd probably be found savaged by badgers. No, you'd probably find like a main road and a fucking McDonald's actually in England. But, yeah. You know, it's one of these things where it did feel kind of slightly risky, slightly unsafe doing these scout camps back in the day. I was always scared. I think I was always just scared the whole time that something would go wrong.
I certainly think about when I was in the cadets, I know you were as well, Lewis. We did army camp, which I've mentioned before, which is where we went to an army base. I think it was near Minehead. And we had to do a 24-hour exercise. So we left at like dawn one day, had to pack up
everything. It's a very army thing.
It was.
Leaving at dawn.
We leave at dawn. So we had to
load
up our Bergens, which are these huge rucksacks. And we were in uniform. Yes. And they gave us a Lee Enfield rifle with blank rounds. We had like five or 10 each. I think it was 10.
A Lee Enfield rifle.
I know.
This is how long, this is how old this story is.
No, they still use them. They still use them. I'm serious. They are really, really good target shooting rifles. And they're cheap. And honestly, after World War II, we had so many of these things that they were still in circulation for cadets and training and stuff. It's still a good rifle anyway. We went off and we had to march for a couple of miles and we had to be aware of ambushes and stuff like that. And then we sort of had to set up a perimeter and post sentries. And then we had to make our tents and have some rations. And then we woke up the next morning, we had breakfast, took down the tents, packed everything up, repacked all our bags while still maintaining, you know, a tactical awareness of the surroundings. And there were older lads, sixth formers and suspicious friends of the sixth formers who were mysteriously on this army camp as well. That's something you wouldn't get these days. It's people who were not associated with the school, but were mates of people who would just come along. So it was weird because we go on this army camp and there was like some of their mates would just come along in full army gear. And they were all, I mean, no, none of them were in the army or had been in the army. They were just ex-pupils who basically had never moved on from being in school and was somehow still friends with people who were at the school. It was bizarre.
You did get that. You did get that a bit, didn't you? Like people who were way too old for something like cadets or scouts, or had moved, or but stuck around kind of after they'd supposed to have left.
Yeah,
you know?
And they just
because
still
they
like
that
school.
Position of power. There's this funny hierarchy, right, where you go like up through the different school groups, and you sort of get promoted to the head boy or whatever of your primary school, and then suddenly you're a year seven and you're a chump, you're a no one, you know, and then you sort of make your way back up the hierarchy again, and they'd obviously made their way up the hierarchy to colonel or whatever it was in the drum corps, and they just can't possibly leave.
I think they understand this is as good as it's
because
gonna get.
If they went into the territorial army or went into another cadet group, they'd be the lowest level again, but because they're holding on to that fucking artificial. I remember those kind of, there were a couple of people like that who were sort of very highly ranked in those groups, right, but in the rest of the school and in the rest of the world they were kind of a nobody.
Yeah.
And so they were obsessed with this kind of idea of holding on to this power that they had in these groups, and they did boss people around, and they enjoyed like kind of it's power, it's this weird corrupting thing, you know, you think it won't like change you, but it definitely does. You have
even
to
though
so,
it's just
like,
the power
of
being one of the older boys in a school, and then also not being at the school, and you can smoke and drink and talk about going to the pub, and everyone's like, "Wow, he's going to the pub." It's like, well, yeah, because he's like 19 or in his early 20s. still hanging around with all the kids from school. What? Why aren't I more suspicious of these people? You know what I mean?
It's quite. Back then it wasn't a problem. You could see it being quite addicting though. Like to have people listen to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually have useful things for you to, you know, almost like being an educator suddenly. Like, you're able to, like, teach these kids how to, like, put up their tent or, you know, survive in the wilderness. And I don't know, sort of semi-manly sort of feeling useful stuff. But these kids, certainly the kid in my cadets, were not the manliest, you know, manliest men type folks.
Yeah.
They were kind of like the people that you see in British Army movies, though. They were kind of slightly... They spoke properly. They weren't like muscly, big, scary Ross Kemp guys that you see in the SAS. You know, like, we're the actual British Army, but we're led by, hello, yes, my name's Douglas. I'll be your colonel for today. So we're going to send you into France. The bloody Nazis have taken over a little town there called Calais. I went on holiday with my family there a couple of times. Lovely place. But those bloody Nazis have taken it. So you, Ross Kemp, and you, Big Mike, you're going to take those... you're going to take those blighters by shock. That's right. You're going to shoot them, take them over, take Calais back for the good jolly old Brits. And then me and my family go on holiday there once again. do you know what I mean? That's the kind of... They were, oddly now, today, the people that I met in cadets who were...
Pencil
were
mustache
a little bit like that.
Gentlemen.
See, but the guys that I had were not like that. The guys I had were not like that. Because when I went to university subsequently, I got a summer job working in a warehouse. It was a pharmaceuticals warehouse, and it served some small chemists in the Bournemouth and Poole area. And what would happen is they would give us their orders for, you know, we need 10 sanitary towel packs, and we need some corn ointment, and we need... Some smelly foot inserts for shoes, and we need 10 boxes of paracetamol. And, you know, we'd have to go around this huge warehouse. And after a while, you just knew where everything was. And you just load it up into a crate and put it to one side with the name of the shop. And then the delivery guy would come and get it and drive it in his little white van and drop it off at that shop. Now, the guy who drove that van was one of the guys who had been lurking around the CCF, the cadet force in the school, and had always sort of been there. And he saw me and he clearly recognized me. And he was like, I think he thought that he'd been caught out, that actually he wasn't some super important army guy, but he just drove a van for a pharmaceutical warehouse.
Oh my God, it's like seeing a teacher at the supermarket or something in their casual clothes with their dog or whatever.
But it's weird because I don't think anybody ever respected him. He was kind of a punchline, but it was just weird. These guys, like they weren't at the school. I don't know if they even were at any point. And I'd just always been fascinated to find out how had they been cleared to go away for a week with children. Because nowadays that would never happen in a million fucking years. I would hope. Anyone listening to this is still at school. Let us know if there are still strange grown-ups that somehow attach themselves to these groups. And
I assume just friends of teachers or someone like that, right? It tended to be a couple of the teachers who were passionate about this, and if the school didn't have a teacher who was a member of the Territorial Army or something, or even vaguely interested in it, then they wouldn't have a cadet force. Often they just have to sort of, you know, put it to one side because there's, you know, you've only got like how many teachers you got at school? 30 teachers?
Oh, we had loads.
Yeah,
loads and loads.
Big schools.
Big
crowded schools.
I mean, it was 1,000 pupils in the school. There were a lot of teachers.
I guess we had, what did we have? So I guess we had like 600 people. So we had like, we had probably, our years were about 90.
Lewis went to Hogwarts. People.
So four, yeah, it felt maybe a bit more than 30 on the
Maybe that's staff, why he likes Harry Potter so much. Maybe his
we
education
had like four
was
houses,
very similar.
We were
he
like
was
an
educated
old
in like a castle academy by like an old
it
hermit
did feel
man
a bit
with
like
a beard
that,
and
though.
Stuff.
You know, with the costumes and the Wands,
lots of wands. Oh my God. I was wanded every day, multiple times a day. It was just relentless.
Yeah.
My poor asshole is.
What? I mean, one of the guys that would come along was the caretaker, I'm pretty sure, or at least a mate of the caretaker. Like sometimes you go to see the caretaker and his mate would just be in the caretaker's office. It's like, you can't just walk into the school. It's just
my,
at
my primary school, we had our caretaker. Was like a fat Elvis impersonator. Like he had the hairdo and everything, and he used to go like, oh, ho, 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 like in the hallways and stuff. And like, we didn't really know who Elvis was, but we thought it was really funny. But like, you know, he'd just be like mopping or like, you know, fixing a toilet or whatever. And it was always like, he always had like his shirt, like collar unbuttoned a little bit, like too much. And he had like, you know, these like chains and like an Elvis haircut and stuff. It was really funny, actually. Good. I wonder what happened to him. He's probably dead now. I mean, he was old at the time. So
a flock of grouse, just ran past.
Nice. No way.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome.
You're right out there. You are
We are.
A flock of grouse.
Yeah, like a whole bunch of them. Just they've run along on the ground. They run. You remember the chocobo races from Final Fantasy?
Yeah. Sure.
They run like chocobo races. That's how they run. Like that, their legs just go like the clappers and they just sort of scuffle along.
Speaking of Final Fantasy, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole after I got that mini NES.
Did you?
I got the mini NES. It has 30 games on it. I mentioned this last week. I really have been enjoying it. It's nice to just dip in and play some old games and get a blast of nostalgia or whatever. But what I found is I'm suffering from the same thing my son suffers from. I'll play through a game that I'm very familiar with. Like, and you know, I played it a lot as a kid. A lot of like the muscle memory hasn't been lost, you know, like I still know how to like do things or whatever. It's great. But the minute I die, I'm completely just like, I'm done. I don't want to play this anymore. So I switch it off. And then what I do is I go onto YouTube and watch a speed run of the game because I want to experience the whole game again, but I don't want to play and then have the inconvenience of dying. So I watched somebody do a 100% of a game that took me months to finish as a kid in like an hour.
Oh, and it's amazing.
Man, they're really satisfying. I watched like Zelda, like Link, you know, Zelda 2 speedrun. It was like an hour, like, you know, the whole game. And it's just like, he's just creaming through these bosses that I remember me and my friends absolutely just screaming at, like when we were kids, you know, they were hard. It took forever to get there. You know, your mom is calling you for dinner. You're like, just a sec, mom, with the boss again. Like you know, you're like under so much pressure to like, you know, beat this boss and stuff.
Just
and,
save it. Yeah, save it in yeah. play. You can't save it, mom. Yeah.
Some
you
old can. Classics. I watched that. I watched the first Final Fantasy game on the NES. I watched a speed run of that. This guy blew my mind. He was just like, he rolled four fighters, you know, the red guys. Like, I never did that. When I was a kid, I had, like, you know, a fighter. I had, like, the ninja. I had, like, the black wizard and the white wizard. Like, you know, just to have like, a good mix and stuff like that. No, not this guy. Four fighters. Just goes in. He didn't have to farm ogres. You know, he didn't have to buy lots of potions to go in the swamp cave. Nothing like that. This guy just goes in with four fighters. Three of them are dead constantly. But the game is weird because like certain fights where there's multiple bad guys, if you only have one person alive, it'll scale. So like he got to fights that I remember getting to as a kid where I was like, oh, fuck, I'm dead. There's like 12 bad guys here. He was getting to these fights with one guy alive and there'd only be like two of them. And it was just like it was a cakewalk. He just blasted through everything. It was awesome.
When you look back at games that subsequently, but like you said, when you played them as a kid and they presented a real challenge and you were pulling your teeth out trying to beat them, and then you watch some grown-up come in and min-max the shit out of it. It sucks all the joy.
It really does, yeah. But as a grown-up now, I can appreciate it because I just want to see the things that I remember. Like, I remember when I first got the airship the first time in Final Fantasy 1, I was like crying with joy. I just thought it was the fucking best thing because the journey to get the stone to then get the airship to come out of the desert was so long. It just took me forever. Like I had Nintendo Power magazines with maps open, everything. Like I was just so into this game. I couldn't have been more than 8 years old at the time, around the same age as like my son now. And I just like, even back then, I just remember having all the resources I could get, you know, like I told you guys, I phoned my dad's friend at work and stuff for like for tips, but he'd never made it that far anyway. And it just like that, just the satisfaction of getting that airship and then being able to like fly around and not bump into enemies and stuff was just incredible. I remember loving that as a kid. And then I'm watching the speed through and the guy does it and it was just like, Oh yeah, that was kind of cool, wasn't it? It really was like not the same, but yeah. I'm still glad to have seen it, sort of thing. But
our psychology is so different. Like, yeah, like speedruns are this thing where if you do watch a speedrun of a game, you can't possibly play that game again, right? Because you're like, I'm going to spend 20 hours trying to complete this game, whereas this guy's done it in 15 minutes, and I know how to do it, and I know I'm never going to do it as well as him, or I don't know. Like, it's like why am I doing this? You know, it kind of is really odd. Speaking of speedruns, there was this thing I played this week, which was interesting, which is kind of this sort of odd horror game that isn't actually, it's an accidental horror game, which is this house. Have you seen this house that's for sale in Louisville or somewhere?
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, there's a house for sale. What was up? I watched like a little bit of that. I saw it. There was like a room full of what looked like a massive porno collection, like a DVD porno collection, and then off to the side of it there was like this walk-in bathtub. Like, what the fuck was that?
I know. So basically there's this, it went a bit viral and there were speedruns on it, which is why you reminded me. But the whole point of this thing is this is a house for sale in Kentucky, and it's got this 3D walkthrough because I guess everyone is locked down now, but also it's just easy for the guy who's selling it to just set up this 3D camera
right
around the house, and then it generates this 3D walkthrough of the house, and then you can just walk around the house like Google Maps style, right? And so you don't have to go and tour a house. You can buy a house online, especially across the country. You know, imagine in America, you want to move to Kentucky. You don't want to have to go to Kentucky and like fucking look at all these houses or whatever. You could just do it online and be like, yeah, this, I think I know what I'm dealing with here. I can see there's mold in the ceiling and there's like the showers like all, you know, manky. And I can see that the garden's fucked, you know, whatever, you know, you know. But normally when you get pictures on a house, you can't see all the floors, right? So you have to go there in person and be like, oh yeah. You realize that it's all really small and pokey, or the ceilings are really weird or shaped, or the floorboards are all manky, whatever. It's good, right? Anyway, there's this horrible house, and it's, you start off in sort of in this sort of lounge area, and you could tell there's like, you could tell it's weird already, because it's, first of all, it's a shithole. It's full of mess. It's full of like Monster Energy cans and like weird things. Like they've got like multiple, like sometimes you've got three or four TVs in the same room.
Wow.
Like one of them, like a massive TV on the wall, a massive TV,
yeah,
like perched on a bed, a massive TV. And it's kind of looks like it's lived in by, I don't know, like three or four crazy homeless people or students. Do you know what I mean? Like really messy students. And then you sort of gradually sort of explore the rest of this house and you realize that they've got this whole DVD burning like setup going on, and they've got this warehouse filled with DVDs of like every conceivable DVD, and it's astonishing. Then you find that there's this incredibly odd bathroom, and that's the point of the game, is to discover this bathroom. And I encourage you to try it just because it's so weird. It only take you like 20 minutes kind of thing.
That does sound weird
to look around. It's super interesting. I don't know how long it's even going to be up, you know, because it's on like a real estate website, right?
Right.
This fucking thing.
Oh, someone will have somehow pinched it or downloaded
Google it. Anyway, there's like speedruns on YouTube to like find the bathtub, and it's like 30 seconds long, you know, because once people know where it is, then it doesn't need a speedrun. Do you know what I mean? For that. But that's the world we live in now, right? It's like these odd speedruns. And I guess what I'm saying with this house is, like, I think it turns out that it's actually there was some sort of illegal activity going on, and they all got arrested.
Right.
And so the house got, you know, seized or whatever and put up for sale.
Oh, my goodness.
And no one's been back.
I'm just looking. So the bathtub is next to 500 Girls Gone Wild DVDs.
Yeah, that's right. What I saw as well. But the fact that you walk down the steps and it's such a,
oh god, that is strange.
It's like a dunking room or something. It's like so weird.
That's what it is actually, because it used to be a chapel that
was
the baptism room.
Because it's got like, normally you have a shower head on the wall, but I can see three in this picture.
Yeah,
three shower heads. What is?
Well, I guess they could baptize multiple people.
They got to hose down the dirty sinners, that's why. they got to wash the sin right off of their gross, disgusting sinner skin.
Yeah, and purify them in the healing light of the Lord.
Yeah, what they do is they get them extra sinned up. They walk through the library of sin, which is all those Girls Gone Wild DVDs in the storage area. It's like one last lathering sin, and like, then you go into the dunking pool of purification.
I thought I knew a lot of movies, okay? I thought I was a pretty pretty clued up on movies. And what I learned walking around this warehouse was that I know nothing. Like,
I think I knew a lot about movies in the 90s when DVDs. I had a lot of time to watch them. But since becoming a dad, I've really lost all of my movie knowledge.
I mean, bear in mind,
I've always been a big movie watcher. Right, every year, I watch so many movies.
There are a lot of movies that go straight to DVD that aren't worth noticing. Like, they're literally not worth the knowledge.
But why would you have those on sale? If
people buy
so
them.
Shit?
You'd be surprised.
But they've got boxes and boxes of these, like, sometimes. And thing is, like, the stuff about that warehouse as well was that they were still going up until relatively recently, because there's some movies that came out this year that are, you know, they've got DVD rips of. And so their DVD Blu-ray business was clearly still going strong up until 2020. And I guess maybe, I don't know. Like,
I think there's a, you're not selling from a shop. Like, you don't rely on someone walking in. They're almost certainly selling these online.
They're at Amazon. I think they were at Amazon reseller.
Right. Yeah. So people will always, there will always be a weird market of people out there who are into some obscure actor or some obscure series
right.
of movies.
I see. And they'll pick up a movie because it's a reference to them, right? Maybe like their family or whatever.
Or they just want to collect bad movies. I know you watch a
lot of daytime crap, PFLX. You're like a big
as we've spoken about this previously. I do
you
not
love
watch
the TV movies
television.
During the day all the time.
I do
every
not watch
week.
Television. I do,
you watch movies on TV all the time.
That's not true. I told you at 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock is the only time I watch television because that's
okay.
when I
so
finish
two
work.
Hours a day.
I
that's quite
down,
a lot.
That's nothing. Most of that is I'll watch the end of Pointless. If you watch Pointless, that's a good show.
Pointless is a good show.
And then
show.
I'll have a look on Film 4 and Sony Movie Classics and everything. If there's an old movie on, I might watch a bit of it. Sometimes I'll record one and I'll watch a film late at night if I'm bored. But honestly, I don't know where this has come from, Lewis. Again.
That's all it is. That's enough. That's enough as someone who watches a movie. It sounds like you watch a movie every day. That's quite a lot.
No, it's not. It's not the case. It's not the case. I honestly hardly watch.
I'm not saying you're watching them 9 hours a day, but 2 hours a day is still a hobby.
I watch daytime TV. Why,
Lewis, aren't you watching a movie a day, Lewis? Like, what else? I'm not being funny, but what else do you have to do all day? No, honestly, though, you have like every 12-year-old boy's dream job, and you have no kids or anything. Like, why aren't you watching a movie a day? You've got more time than anybody.
I'm reading books and stuff. Oh. I do tend to watch a movie a day, actually. So I am honestly like happy with saying that. I'm not right. embarrassed about that at all. But PFLX, I know you're a fellow movie watcher and you're the same age as me. When I was a kid, my parents had the, I don't know, the fucking, what was he called? Roger Ebert or Barry Norman or some asshole's mega Bible of
Those. They're like a phone, it's like a phone book, but
it was fucking enormous.
Yeah.
And of course, like anytime a movie came on the TV, you'd be able to look it up and he'd be like, 2.5 stars. James Dean plays a really unusual character in this classic 50s movie. Do you know what I mean? It would have everything in there. But then it quickly, because my parents' version of it was 5 years out of date when they bought it, as everything was back then.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't really have anything kind of, it was kind of, I think 1 in 2 movies that I looked up were not in there that were on the TV. And also I spent a lot of time just looking through it. Like reading it. It was just one of those casual things we had in the lounge.
Yeah,
so I'd end up fucking reading this phone book of movies. And so I feel like my knowledge of movies is, if not like, I don't know necessarily what happened in them, but I've usually like felt like I've heard of them maybe. And so I was looking through this warehouse and I didn't fucking recognize any of them. And I was like, but they almost looked
weren't
like
they just all mostly
movies
pornos,
that I
though?
Should know. No, but they were all called things like Among
lick
the Leaves.
Lick a farting ass too.
No, they weren't all called Lick a... They weren't all... There was only a small porno section. Most of it was just... those shit movies. Like, just shit movies.
Right.
Like,
one star review, that very
features
small porno
a star who I've never sort of heard of, but I sort of vaguely recall that they should be famous. Like not Jean-Claude Van Damme, but... You know, Andy Van Damme.
I'm gonna be
like,
Andy
Van Damme. Who's that?
Alan Van Damme.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there'd be people that like that almost sounded. And so I wasn't even sure whether they were real movies or just sort of those fakey, rippy, knockoffy ones. Because you know they have a lot of those, don't they? Every time there's like a disaster movie. They have Armageddon and Deep Impact. And then there's this third one called Meteor. And it's like got some shit ripoff guy. They're still making these, right? And
They get
like one star on IMDb or whatever. And you see them all the fucking time, like on pirate sites and other sites, like... and you're like, what the fuck is
this? Amazon Prime Video has lots of those. You know, like if you're looking through a category and you're just, at first you start looking through a movie category for a genre and you're like, wow, they've got so much stuff here. It's unbelievable. And you keep scrolling. You're like, I wonder what else they've got. And you keep scrolling, you keep scrolling. And when you start to get to the end of like the legitimate movies, they just start serving you up all sorts of garbage, like
literally
like tons of B movies, like YouTube movies, like YouTube playthroughs. Sometimes, like it's just I don't even know how that stuff gets in there, but yeah, it's funny.
So, do you guys want to know what board games I've got on offer here in the house and what books? Because I always fascinate when I go.
Wait, before you get into that though, I want to know, because I feel like now we need an update on this every week. Have you played any golf while you've been out there?
Oh, yes. Okay, so not while I'm here, but before we came away.
Oh, yes.
You sounded like a scout leader.
Yes,
like a,
yes. Yes, I'm so pleased you asked.
Yes.
I am pleased you asked. It was on the Sunday before we came away. I played, or the Saturday, sorry. I played in the Academy tournament.
Wow.
Which is for new players.
I'd like to thank the Academy for letting me play in the tournament.
This is a change because last week when you're having an existential crisis, you couldn't hit the ball.
Well, that's how it goes.
Those tin cup moments where you doubted yourself at the end of the movie, but you just had to get your swing back.
It's true. So I went to the driving range and I hit about 100 balls. And I found that the driver, and I spoke to some friends of mine about this, I still struggle with the driver. I think I need a special lesson just with the driver. But with most of the other clubs, including the hybrid, golfers will know what I'm talking about. No problem. I'm hitting it reasonably well.
Right.
It was a format called Texas Scramble. And what happens is you're a team and you all hit the ball from the tee. And then whatever the best shot is, you all take the next shot from there. And then whatever the best shot of your three is, you take the next shot from there. So it's a team effort to try and get a low score to beat the other teams. And so I didn't feel so bad because I knew that if I shanked it horribly into the water, it doesn't matter because one of my teammates will have hit a decent shot.
Right,
so we played nine holes, and I'm not kidding. The second hole that we played was beautiful. It was a beautiful team effort. We did it in three shots. It was a par three. We did it in three. And I hit the tee shot, and it was absolutely fucking glorious. It was the best shot I've ever hit, straight as an arrow, landed just short of the green. The next guy came up, chipped it right near the hole. The other guy putted it. I was like, lads, that was an awesome team effort. We were really happy. I did hit a couple of stinkers, but on the whole, it was actually pretty good. Like, I was hitting
so
it reasonably
they
well.
Were able to make up for your lower skill level by like the fixing your problems. Is that how it works? Like, if you fucked it up, they could fix your, you know, they could do the putting and the chipping, and you could do the driving.
But there was one of the three of us was very experienced. He was really good, and the other guy was similar to me. He'd been playing a little bit longer than me. He was this big German dude, little older, and he'd retired, so he was probably in his I'd say late 50s, early 60s, and he had very very fancy clubs. I'll say that. And his sort of driving everything, he was not dissimilar to me. He hit some very nice shots with the five and the six iron. Really, really nice. But again, he struggled with the driver as well. And I would honestly say that our performances were not so dissimilar that I was like, oh, this is fucking hopeless. Like, it was actually pretty close. It was really good. It was a really positive atmosphere. If you hit a good shot, everyone was like, that was fantastic. It just felt really good. And I was like, this
is like, when you guys were done, did you guys like go have like a steam sauna together and slap each other's butts with your hands and towels, like flick towels at each other and stuff? Or is that not really a golf thing?
Sadly not.
That's
sadly
more like
not.
A baseball thing, I think, after a good game of baseball.
Yeah, head down to the dugout.
Get down in the dugout. Just get nude and just fucking have a steam and just stare at each other's Johnsons and stuff. Whatever. It's just, you know, it's just a fucking tough game. Yeah. You know, you got to relax somehow.
Yeah, just lean in, and if they kiss, just keep kissing.
Just lean in and see if they kiss you. Just, you know, sit.
Because you never know.
Sit next to each other really close.
Idea.
Just see what happens.
Just got
to
try. Yeah. if they move back, then, you know, you just pretend it was like nothing and they just carry on being friends and just laugh it out.
Yeah.
I'm just fucking with you.
It sounds joking.
Just come here. So imagine people like it feels to me like what you've played there isn't golf, but a kind of novelty kind of golf fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Day. I want to say as well, what's with this 9-hole bullshit? Like, when are you going to man up and not be such a puss and do a full 18 like a big boy?
Can I just say, neither of you's ever hit a fucking golf ball in your life. So
no, I have. Lewis has seen me actually. I've got good form.
Oh, really?
He's got really solid form. Oh, man. It's like a swan, I'd say. Like the long neck.
Yeah.
Just like swinging a fucking
swan. Swans don't have arms. So looking forward to seeing
like
that.
Imagine a swan with really buff arms.
I tell you guys about a nice day that I had, and you want me to turn it into a gay sauna session, and now you're flaming it. I don't think you really play golf.
No. We're just fucking with you. Yeah, come on, let's kiss.
This sounds really healthy. I'm glad you're meeting friends.
Don't back up now. I'm going to tell you about the shitty board games.
Get
I'm done
good
with
time.
Golf. Well, Trivial Pursuit Master Edition. Obviously, that's there.
Oh, that's good.
Hang on a second. So I went to a coffee shop this week and they had a whole row of books. And I should have taken a picture if I knew we were going to fucking talk about this because I noticed how shit they were. it was one of these take one, leave one situations. And so what happened was a load of militant vegans had obviously been in and fucking taken all the good books and left like why animals can feel pain and stuff like this. Do you know what I mean? On the fucking whole, the whole wall was like very, I'm obviously a vegan, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not like that kind of thing. If I'm sitting in a coffee shop, I don't want to read about animal cruelty pictures of pigs suffering in the corner of my eye. I just want to sit there and read my coffee and maybe look at, I don't know, a picture of balloons in Bristol or something. Do you know what I mean?
I've got one here for you guys on that topic. I've got one here.
All right.
What do you think of this, Lewis? As a vegan yourself, I'm not a vegan for the record, but still, I wonder what you think of this, okay?
I'll get you one day.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
Burger King, right? You know,
sure.
Burger King. They have a vegan burger now that you can get.
Yes.
Do you think that a vegan should be eating a vegan burger from Burger King?
Why not? It's the way forward, isn't it? It's like you've got to start somewhere.
But I think Burger King have probably made enough money off of slaughtering animals and, you know, putting them into gigantic batteries and mistreating them and stuff over the decades that it's been going for to not need your support to go totally vegan, right? But like, don't you feel like if you're giving them money, you're just like kind of supporting shitty...
May I speak on that very briefly? I know I'm not. I don't have.
No, it's nice to have the three perspectives here.
I don't have an or in this fight because I'm not a vegan, but or a vegetarian. But I suppose that if we look at the history of companies and say you guys have done bad things, so we're never going to let you do good things because of it, then there's no motivation for companies to change. And that surely has to be something that people want.
But they're still doing these things. They haven't just gone completely vegan. They're still doing these shitty things alongside trying to make money off of vegans as well. I just don't think people should be supporting them with that, especially vegans who should be about
thing,
more than
Sips,
that, right?
We live in a capitalist society, right? And it's all about money, okay? I'm very hopeful that it costs them... Sure, it costs them a quid to make a patty that's, you know, cruelty full, but it probably costs them 10p to make the vegan patty because it's fucking made of
tofu. And they'll sell it, but the marker...
And they'll double the price, right?
Yeah, of course they
will. So the profit margin on those ones push through. If they can make it taste better and, you know, and be less gristly and gross and, you know, less guilt-filled. Oh, here's a lovely, delicious, cruelty-full, guilt-filled burger. It's just an interesting thing, right?
Like, I don't know. Like, it feels like maybe...
I think money's the only thing that's going to change. And I think that them learning this, you know, that these burgers will sell and will make them more money is the way to move towards a better
I feel like it's
system.
it's another trap for vegans in a lot of ways.
I also think if you look at large companies like BP and Shell and all these oil companies and energy companies, that have been polluting for years, oil spills and all the gases and everything that's contributing to climate change and everything. If we don't allow those companies to also do things that we support, then they'll just spend all that money lobbying against all the good stuff. That's it. So you either offer them an in. I understand what you're saying completely.
Yeah.
Is why should
we
allow...
It's just an interesting shower thought, really.
Right.
Like,
no, I get it.
It makes sense
to
me.
Yeah, it's a really interesting... It's really interesting. I think that you're right about that as well. Like, you know, why should we allow... You know, someone who's historically been so terrible to suddenly, you know, get because you could see how it would work, right? People, vegans would come along and bring up their other meat eating friends, and end up to be more meat burgers be sold. You know, you never know.
If like, you're talking about reform, like it's not, you know, like reform in a traditional sense, like a prisoner comes out of prison and is a better person, but they're not just still doing crimes on the side, right? Because then they're not really reformed. You know what I mean?
It's true.
It's kind of the same, but it's not. I mean, it's not. It's an extreme.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying, but I think the problem is if we deny these companies the chance to make money from something that is essentially positive, and I say that for all the reasons you guys point out about cruelty to animals and the pollution that it causes, like mass farming is bad for the environment, all this stuff, I get it. If we say to all these large companies that are in place, already have the funds, already have the geography, in terms of the real estate and everything, if we say to them, no, you guys are still bad, I think it's a terrible tactical move on the part of a progressive concept. And you see it all the time.
I'm happy enough for them to just fade away. They've had their time. Maybe somebody else's turn.
They won't.
But the only language any corporation understands is money. That's the only thing, because that's what we are driven. That's how the free market works and how everything works and how we've built this amazing society, which we're incredibly lucky to have today. You know, we wouldn't have had it. And it's true to say that we wouldn't be, if we had a communist society, you know, it wouldn't be as rich and productive as it is at the moment. And I think that obviously unrestrained capitalism is probably bad.
Yeah.
And it needs to be taxed. You know, we need to just make sure we make it more expensive for companies to cause pollution. Yeah, sure, they're welcome to do it, but we want them to, you know, I'd rather, this is why we have to have the subsidies and the tax incentives in the right places. I think a lot of the time they're not, because they're historically set up to support, you know, the coal miners or, you know, the lobbyists, like you said, PFLAX. It's a very kind of,
I just think a lot of these progressive ideas like environmentalism and animal rights and everything, they want to sell the entire picture, and you have to accept it all right now, wholesale, and make total change, or it's a failure. And this is going to be a gradual change. In some cases, we need it to be slightly less gradual and a bit more accelerated. But if we don't go in tactically and say, all right, we have to let these companies that are historically the bad guy in and hope that they are agents for change as well. If we don't do that, then what's the fucking point? You're going to lose. You're going to have a bunch of tofu-eating hippies are going to change the world. No. Unfortunately, we're going to have to rely on mega corporations to do it. And you have to hope that they get on the same page.
Well, the only way you can control them is with money. That's all they care
about. Exactly.
Yeah.
We're doomed. I talked to old Simon Clark this week because we have the same birthday, and he came down and we had a chat and we had a pie minster together.
Oh, nice.
I had a vegan.
Is he a vegetarian as
pie?
Well? Old Clarky? Old suck up Clarky, sucking your dick about your birthday.
Vegan or vegetarian?
I think he's trying to be vegan, but I think he likes cheese too much or something like that.
God bless that cheese eating man.
But he's writing a book currently.
Oh, nice.
Which is a big project for him.
Is it called How Lewis Brindley is Amazing and Why I Love Him?
Yeah.
Part 1.
No, because he's a climate scientist.
By the way, never read the YouTube comments on his videos. Never read them.
Because full of deniers.
Oh my God. And it's like, I feel like, obviously, Dr. Simon Clark is a smart guy. And the tendency when someone goes at someone who's like academic and smart with an absolute falsehood is to respond to them and to try to argue them around to your way of thinking. And it just never works, because these idiots have their head in the sand. They don't want to hear about facts. They just want to hear the propaganda that they've had bled into their brains.
Who are these people? Like, where? And
I know. How do these people exist? Like, I'm stunned.
Because it's been politicized,
right?
Have been politicized, and so
I assume everyone must know someone like this. But I've managed to sort of slowly work those people out of my life.
I know you guys fairly well, but do you guys have any sort of like guilty hidden beliefs that you've never like really shared with anyone, but I'm like sure. go against the grain a bit? Like, can you think of any?
Yeah, none that I'm going to share, but yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to share my hidden bigotry and misogyny.
I don't know if I actually have any. Mean, like, the things that I think about, I usually talk to either my stream or like you guys about. Like, I don't think I really have anything overly sort of
I pride myself on being willing to change, and I have seen over the last 10 years sort of ideas that I previously had been converted one way or another, not necessarily anything too serious. You know, I used to believe that 9/11 was a hoax.
A friend of mine did, like, really. We had a chat.
I never believed that it was a hoax, but I was interested enough to watch documentaries about it or whatever, because it just a different perspective.
No, it's not a different perspective. That's the problem. It's like saying, it's like these giving these flat earthers, it's just a different perspective.
I mean, even that though, like, I'm interested to see what makes them tick. I don't agree with it at all, but I would happily watch somebody explain.
We're all fascinated. Yeah, I think it's
interesting.
I hope that I'm willing to, I think sometimes you don't even necessarily realize you have a prejudice until someone calls you on it, or until it affects you in some way. Because sometimes, you know, these beliefs are never a problem. You know, if you grew up, I don't know, in some rural hick town in America where you were all racists, and then you never met a black person, then you've never really had to confront that inbuilt prejudice that community has given you or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Over the course of that time.
Yeah.
So I think until you're confronted with these things, sometimes so it's like a little bit like when you're a kid, you're taught, I don't know, like a handbag, like, is a handbag or whatever, and you go through life thinking, oh, it's a handbag, and no one calls you on it. It's like, and so for your whole life, you're like, oh, it's a handbag, not a handbag. I've been saying it wrong all this time. Like, I sometimes find stuff like that I've done wrong, or like I've pronounced Buenos Aires wrong my whole life, or something like this. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you
stuff
pronounce
like,
Buenos just, Aires wrong. You're
I still an pronounce
idiot.
It. I still pronounce it like that. It's just this thing that we've always done. I don't know, and so everyone always finds these things. Like, the classic ones are Harry Potter. Like, people doing Hagrid and Hermione or whatever. Those are like,
oh,
two
yeah, that's
things
a classic.
That,
yeah,
that's but, not but a
like,
classic.
There's good examples of egg corns like that, where people have thought an acorn is an egg corn.
When it comes to attitudes, like, there are certain words. If your parents call them egg corns, you're going to think they're called egg corns, and that's how you're going to grow up. And interestingly enough, we were watching telly the other day. It was Channel 4 News. I stuck it on. And there was a woman on there talking about the slave trade. And my eldest was like, what does she mean, the slave trade? Because they haven't covered it at school yet. And I was talking to her about the transatlantic slave trade and the history of slavery in America and all that kind of stuff. And she asked a question. She said, why are they racist? And I was like, well, that's a very difficult question. And she said, well, why aren't we racist? I think that's a really interesting question, is why... why aren't I racist and some people are? And I said, well, imagine if me and mummy were deeply racist. Let's say we hated black people. Let's say that was our racism. And we brought you up in that mold. You would be a racist. Like, that's just the way it goes. And I think it's interesting that we essentially see all racists as that they've made an active decision. But just like you said, Lewis, they might have actively just grown up around other racists, and that's the culture. How do you break that down is very, very difficult. And I think
understanding that it's the same thing with me. And I know a lot of people are religious out there, and I don't want to shit on their beliefs and stuff, but I realize that, you know, if you happen to be born in India, you'll probably be a Sikh or a Hindu, like, or a Muslim, and, you know, and according to where you were born, and you certainly wouldn't be a Christian. Well, maybe you would in certain places.
Yeah,
but
no,
there's
a little bit over there for sure.
So, but again,
so actually, like, it felt to me like, just by virtue of luck and family, suddenly you luckily were the correct God area, and you had the right beliefs. And I felt like that was so to me so ludicrous.
There's definitely a period in your life where you sort of look back on your upbringing and question some of the morals and values.
That's so important, isn't it? is when you get to that age where you suddenly have your own thoughts and your own assessment and your reflection on things you believe.
I think what helps with that is the difference with that is I've had moments like that where I sort of got to a certain age. I looked back at how I was raised and I thought, I'm not sure about that or that or that. But I've had the space to think like that too,
right?
Because I live very far away from my parents. I don't see them every day. I don't talk to them every
day. You know what else I think makes a big difference?
Deciding that those values and those feelings are not and you can decide, you know, if you went against the community, that's a problem. If everyone else in your village is racist and your family is racist and your uncle's racist and the people who look after your kids and the people who teach your kids are all racist, sometimes it's easy just to be like, okay, I guess I'm just not going to say anything.
Right, but also...
I feel like in the 90s, like, there's elements of that of homophobia, right? Like lots of media and stuff. I mean, it was very common for us to call everything gay and use it as, like, an insult, right? Like, you're fucking gay or whatever. And that was just how it was done back then. Was I actually homophobic? I don't think I was. I don't actually think I was. I don't think I thought about it in those terms. It was just... it was just vocabulary at the time that was popularized through shows that we were watching, TV, and just the schoolyard stuff as well.
Yeah, like teen culture.
I don't think that everybody I grew up with was a homophobe by any means.
In the same way, there was a lot of, even recently, you know, like the, you know, with people using, you know, some of the early seasons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, full of like transphobic stuff and like kind of using the arsler and stuff like this, like stuff that is not, you know, that's recent. That's like, that's very quick to change. Like,
but
you know,
don't you think that the biggest motivator to have you reassess your beliefs is talking to other people?
It's realizing the impact that it has where you didn't think before that there wasn't.
Before people lose their mind about Always Sunny, I know that they're bad people and that's part of it, right? And that they're people you shouldn't emulate. Why they're these terrible people.
Yeah.
It's used in a context that's okay. But I think that even so, like watching it now is tricky.
But this is why I think when people from a small sort of community that doesn't really have much sort of exposure to other opinions get solidified, is, you know, when the famous idea of the kid going off to university and coming back with crazy ideas. Like, that's a real thing. Like, you go away to university, you have your ideas challenged because you meet up with people from all over the world, all over the country, from different backgrounds and cultures, and you have your beliefs challenged. You have those arguments at 3 a.m. when you're all high, and it makes you think. Even if you don't change at that moment, it makes you think about some of the ideas that you've got. And over time, I think it changes people. My family just came back, so I'm going to have to call it a day there.
All right, that's good.
Right, enjoy the rest of your retreat.
Enjoy your holiday. Holy crap.
Yeah, have a nice rest of your time. I hope it goes better than it has been by the sounds of it. But
I'm sure we'll have a wonderful... We're going out for a pub lunch, so I'm sure that's going to be
fantastic. Oh, there you go.
Thank you for joining us.
There you go.
Oh, my pleasure.
Have a Burger King vegan burger on us.
Yeah.
I'm going to have some locally sourced pork for lunch. Just
nice.
It's a sheep. The island of Sheppey. You've got to have lamb.
No. Yeah. There are lots of sheep, but I'm not going to have lamb. It's
eat their balls. Just pork. Fucking devour
eat
those
some balls. Just eat those golf. Eat that guy's golf balls.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye,
everybody.
Bye. 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 Bye.